Hey, this is Zep, and on behalf of the guys, Stru, Boomer, and Lukey, we want to thank you for downloading and listening to our podcast of The Ticket Outdoors, brought to you by Mills Fleet Farm. And remember, when nothing's going right, just go fishing.
This isn't one of those silly, overdone commercials that makes you change stations. Nope, this is a good, old-fashioned nuts and bolts commercial. Really, it's about nuts, bolts, and hardware. It's about you and Mills Fleet Farm. If you make a living fixing things and building things, you use plenty of hardware. When it comes to hardware, you need great quality, selection, and price. You need Mills Fleet Farm.
It's time for Ticket Outdoors on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Just let it play out. Let's ease on into our Wednesday evening here. We got the wild card.
Nah, you got you got the wild card. You got the microphone on for Stephen Edward Robert Struzinski.
The microphone is on. And we've got Boomer over there. Oh, wait a second. Hold on before he talks. Boomer stands for loud. I found out. His microphone is at half the level. He's a young man. He's excited about hunting and fishing.
Especially when I find out that I'm supposed to be chasing these monster brown trout with Hadia, and then the thunderstorm hits the Milwaukee Harbor.
So. Yeah, so what happened there? We had Hadia on last week, and you guys were going after the big trout up there, which super jealous. But what happened?
You know what? Hadia and I planned a great day to do some photo and some film work on the Milwaukee Harbor. It's a special time of year where there's 5 to 10 days to catch these monster brown trout and learn a lot from Hadia about doing it. And grab his T-Pro, get out there in the old Alumacraft. But there's rain, there's storms, and just like all of our trips, Stru,
Murphy's Law.
There's a front coming in. So Hadia was out there fishing. He's like, Boomer, we did okay. And you guys know how much passion he has.
Yes, we do.
I heard it last week.
And he's
still on the interview. If I pot up the phone right now, he's still there.
Yeah, he's still talking.
Yeah, that's
he's
right. Like, yeah.
So, and I'm like, well, before I make this six-hour drive, it looks like rain and strong chance of thunderstorms. And really, I don't really mind the rain, guys. You know, I can throw the suit on and bear the elements. But the thunder scares me just a little bit. I like my
white out in the water can sizzle up. Yeah, that. And then when you get when the winds start blowing that rain, you can't see anything. You can't get a line in the water. It's always about the wind. No matter what you do, ride a motorcycle, sail a boat, hunt, fish. It's all about the wind.
You know, the older you get, the more you'll find out that you're, maybe you will, but I am 63 years old. You'll find out that you're more of a fair weather fisherman, a fair weather golfer, a fair weather everything.
I find at 49, I'm starting to find that out. I just not quite as, when I was young, Boom's age, charge. Now I'm like, well, I don't know. Let me see what it's doing outside.
If you got 45 degrees and drizzling and you want me to sit in the boat, give me a cocktail, a good-looking woman, and a movie.
I tell you what, guys, though, it was absolute torture. I mean, I loved it, but, you know, Wednesday we did the live broadcast at the Northwest Sports Show.
Yes.
And I was there with the rest of the Alumacraft team Wednesday through Sunday. And, guys, when you're sitting there talking to people about fishing and open water, and I'm talking wearing sandals, sunburn, sunblock, catching crappies where the sun's coming down and it's still 70, 80 degrees. And then Hadi and I are like, guess what, dude? The big brown trout are in. You got to get out here, Boomer. I was absolutely salivating at the mouth to get to Milwaukee.
It was torture. Sick human being.
I hear where you're coming from. It's like, you know, talking about our deer open around here, you get excited. And then you're talking about an elk trip out to Montana or going up and shooting. I mean, you just get so amped up for a trip like that.
Yes. It's almost like when you went skiing recently and Zeph just came. I'm not talking about that. But when Zeph just went skiing, I don't care if it's with family members are just friends. I don't care if it's hunting, fishing, golfing, or skiing.
Yeah.
75% of the fun is anticipating and getting ready for the event. I think that is so cool. That's what's fun about it.
You know what? And I'm pretty jacked up, too, because even though my trip got scheduled this week to the Milwaukee Harbor, at the end of this show, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the cool stuff I saw at the Northwest Sports Show. But I was talking to my friend Liz at Wigwam, and they were about a mile down the Vitus landing over on the Rainy River, and they had just caught a 60-inch sturgeon. The Rainy River, folks, is open, and there are hundreds of boats.
Open for walleye for a while,
Until April 14th, I believe, and sturgeon. And
the race is on for the Rainy River.
Yeah.
I talked to a guy headed up there today.
It's crazy. She was telling me that it's absolutely packed at at the resorts up there. They still got some room, but there are just boats after boats. And guess what? There are rods bending and smiling happening. Yeah. 40 degree weather.
Ooh, a lot of fun.
Why do they suspend the walleye in the middle of April?
You know, I think, Zep, to give them a chance to give a little break.
Right.
You know, they're getting close to spawning season, and they're going to be running up that river.
I suppose it's so intense up there.
Yes.
With all the resorts and so many,
yep,
you know, anglers coming in, that it just, you've got to let them breathe and come back, yep, and spawn. And,
and okay, they funnel into that river, Zep.
Right.
So, I mean, not exactly, but, you know, they use that expression as a kid, fish and shoot, you know, shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
So, you got to give those walleyes a little break, because there's going to be days up there where folks are hooking 100 walleyes a day.
There are going to be days up there where folks are hooking each other, I bet.
Yes.
I bet they get,
yes,
close up in the mouth of,
yes,
that river.
But the new T-Pro Boys is going to be ready from Dan's Southside Marine pretty
soon.
You
got a lot to be excited about, my man.
Well, Zipper, I think before we get on the new T-Pro 195, yeah, Alumacraft with Boomer, we have to give him up 3 or 4 times in the boat by himself so he knows what the hell he's doing, so we don't crash into trees and crap. But,
Speaking of knowing what the hell I'm doing, for our folks out there who are still looking for that right Alumacraft and looking for those right electronics to put on that boat or motor, this weekend I want to thank Dan Southside. You know, they're a big sponsor, mm-hmm, for us out here. They've got an open house going on this weekend, Friday, Saturday, at Dan Southside Marine. Come on board and check out some of the premier pontoons Dan's got down there. Those awesome Alumacraft fishing boats off of 35W and 98th. And they're probably giving some free soda pops, some snacks, and go down to Dan's on Friday and Saturday and enjoy.
Yeah, they've been out to the boat show, the Northwest Sports Show, but nothing like getting down to the shop and talking to the guys, because that's where the wheeling,
right,
and dealing gets done.
Right.
Fellas, we have a jam-packed show. We're going to actually get to our first break here a little bit early. We're going to be talking with Graham Gresseth about snow geese. Craig Enwall, he's the new director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Yep.
We're going to talk to them about that, their year ahead of us. And up next, I'm just trying to think of the proper introduction. I'm actually a little nervous to talk to our next guest. We talk about that greatest generation,
right,
celebrating its 70th anniversary of wrapping up those two wars and providing us with the life that we're enjoying right now. We have an outstanding member of the greatest generation. It's I don't know if we'll be able to do this justice, so we're going to let Captain Jerry Yellen tell his story and talk to our listeners when we come back with Ticket Outdoors.
From the locker room to your radio, tune in the Wake Up Call from the writers of Cold Omaha every Sunday morning at 8.
Peterson has made fans uneasy with his return because he has been so obnoxiously vocal with how uneasy he is with us. If Peterson had come back and just kept his mouth shut, we wouldn't bat an eyelash. We would welcome him back and cheer for him to score touchdowns.
I mean, for Peterson, this isn't home, and it seems like it never has been.
The Wake Up Call with Cold Omaha on Minnesota's Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.
It's time once again for George's 20th annual Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 10th through the 12th. This year's Minnesota Muskie Expo features the lowest prices on boats, tackle, and resorts. There's even free tackle and games for the kids. Join the Ticket Outdoors crew for a broadcast live from the Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 11th from noon to 2. The Minnesota Muskie Expo is April 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Gengelhoff Center at Concordia University in St. Paul. Visit MinnesotaMuskieExpo.com for more details.
We at Dan Southside Marine would like to redefine the term man's best friend to mean his boat. Now, before you get all tweaky, let's talk this through. Although your dog is fun, dependable, and great to take fishing, so is an Alumacraft Navigator 165CS. And while your dog may retrieve ducks with lightning speed, he'd have to be just a tick faster to pull you up for a slalom run like the Stingray 200 Bow Rider. And sure, your furry friend obeys your every command with heartbreaking enthusiasm, but think of the enthusiasm you'll feel watching the receptionist from the gym sunbathe on your premier pontoon Escapade 235. And finally, your boat will never drink too much lake water and throw up in your boat. To learn more about the best boats and motors in the Twin Cities, or to complain about the dog thing, visit Dan's Southside Marine.
You'll not find a bigger inventory of premier pontoons and Alumacraft boats anywhere in the Twin Cities. Don't wait. Now's the time to buy. Any boat you see online is available for sale at Dan's Southside Marine.
This isn't one of those silly, overdone commercials that makes you change stations. Nope, this is a good old-fashioned nuts and bolts commercial. Really, it's about nuts, bolts, and hardware. It's about you and Mills Fleet Farm. If you make a living fixing things and building things, you use plenty of hardware. When it comes to hardware, you need great quality, selection, and price. You need Mills Fleet Farm.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Hey, I do want to remind everybody, new tires before going on your next road trip is not a bad idea. Fleet Farm carries all the best brands, Michelin, BF Goodrich, Cooper, Roadrunner, many more. They're all over at Mills Fleet Farm. Thanks for sponsoring Ticket Outdoors. All right, fellas, like I said, we throw our guests a curveball every once in a while. We're going to be talking deer hunting tonight. We're going to be talking goose hunting. We're going to be talking fishing opener and all that good jazz. But we want to take some time for Ticket Outdoors. When you have a moment to have a guest of this caliber on, I think no matter, you know, if you're a tennis show or whatever you do, you take some time. And we have with us Jerry Yellen, a World War II fighter pilot, a P-51 Mustang, served our country most honorably as a captain in the Battle of Iwo Jima and many other battles. Welcome, sir, to Ticket Outdoors.
Well, nice to be here. I'm down in Iowa where it was 80 degrees today. I don't know what's doing up in Minnesota, but...
About the same, and we might look like we might get a thunderstorm here in the city a little bit later on tonight, but we hit 83 today, which surprised me. I wasn't outside much today. I was stuck inside doing some stuff on the microphone and went and checked the weather. I had to refresh it a couple of times. I wasn't sure 83 was right. So it got warm all of a sudden, but 20 degrees cooler tomorrow. So we're on that.
Something like that.
Yeah, we're on that spring roller coaster. You know, we're up today, down tomorrow. It seems like it's been like that all winter. Down in Iowa, Mr. Yellen, is that where you're from?
No, Mr. Yellen was my father. I'm only 91. You call me Jerry.
Thank you.
What do you know? He's a retired captain. He's a smartass at the same time. We like this guy.
I'll tell you, Jerry, we're such, you know, I hope you've heard a lot of this. I think you probably have. I'm 49 years old. Both my grandfathers served in the European in Germany, and my dad's uncle, I guess I call him Uncle Lee, served in the Pacific for the Navy on the Yorktown and the Wasp. But it's just, you feel so small when you talk to a fella of your caliber or somebody of that generation and of those millions of American men and many women, too, that served our country over in World War II, because you did so much. And you maintain that through your life. You never forgot that along the way. It just, it's inspiring, and I'm stuttering here a little bit. I've been in radio for 25 years, and I'm a little nervous to talk to you. I'll be honest. Let's start at the beginning of your service to our country.
Let me make a comment first, Brian.
Yes.
You know, there were 16 million of us that went through the Depression. I was, 5 years old when the Depression started in 1929, and we went through the Depression, all of us that served in World War II.
Yeah.
And we had one word that was constantly reminded. We were constantly reminded of us commitment to the other people. We were a nation of people of you and from our generation, commitment to the other people. That's what you learn in the military. We learn to kill. But you learn that your life isn't worth anything without the life of the guys around you or the girls around you. So the commitment that we made to each other, I served my country, but after the war, I made a commitment to a woman. We married in 1949. October last year was our 65th wedding anniversary.
Attaboy.
And I'm sure that we went through everything, monetarily, physical, sexually, all of the things that people get divorced for. Because there's no sense of commitment. That, I think, is the difference.
Yeah, the commitment. Let's go back to the beginning when you started your service for our country. How old were you? How did you end up walking into the Air Force or the Air Guard at that time? I mean, why them and why at that time? I'm going to take a wild guess that it had something to do with Pearl Harbor.
Well... I built model airplanes that I got when I delivered Liberty and Collier magazines to my neighborhood starting when I was 6 or 7 years old. And I knew all of the World War I pilots and airplanes that they flew, and I was fascinated with airplanes. Never been up in an airplane. And I had a college scholarship to ride a college in New Jersey with no money for home or food, books. So I was working in a steel mill, and I postponed entrance to school when I graduated, entrance into college. I graduated in June of 1941 from high school, 17 years old. So I wanted to start in the spring semester, and then Pearl Harbor, on that day, I was 17 years old. 2 months later, on my 18th birthday, February 15th, 1942, I went to the Army, got the papers, filled them out, asked my mom and dad to sign them, which they did reluctantly.
Yeah.
And so, as a high school graduate, you have to have 2 years of college or pass an equivalent exam. I passed the exam, a mental exam, flunked the physical. 20/30 vision in one eye.
Yeah.
And the doctor told me, go home, stay in a dark room, eat a lot of carrots, don't read anything, come back and take the test again.
That's funny.
But my mother was on the draft board, and I made her bring me the chart. So I memorized the eye chart.
That's
and
wonderful.
I was accepted as an aviation cadet in August of 1942. I was inducted into the military.
Did you ever wonder that you thought you might need that vision while you were up there? Did that ever occur to a young, reckless man?
Let me tell you something. I talked about commitment.
Yeah.
Our country was attacked, and I was going to serve, and I wanted to fly.
Yeah.
I get all the way up to Luke Field in advanced training. I've got 10 hours in a P-40, and the last examination was called a 6-4. It was 2 weeks before you graduated. My uniforms were bought. And I took the eye test, and I flunked the eye test. I still had 20/30 vision in one eye, and they changed the chart. So the doctor told me, you've come so far, we're going to put you in transport planes. I said, no, I'm a fighter pilot, sir. I have 10 hours in a fighter plane, a P-40. I'm a fighter pilot. He said, not if I have anything to say about it. I said, well, who can change that? He said, the commandant of cadets. How do you get into that? How do you get to see him? Go through the channels. What does that mean? Ask me first, sir. I want to see the commandant of cadets. Now I'm standing in front of a chicken colonel. He says, what can I do for you, Ellen? And I said, sir, I have 10 hours in a P-40. I'm a fighter pilot. They want to put me in transport pilots because I have 20/30 vision in one eye. And he said, anybody that's got the guts to come to see me, you're a fighter pilot.
There you
that's
go.
How they a fighter pilot.
You know what I was just thinking? I thought, with that kind of determination, put this man anywhere he wants to be. You're not going to let yourself fail. So now you're going to be a fighter pilot. From there, where do you head? I mean, how's a fighter pilot end in either Europe or, but you ended up in the Pacific?
Well, they start with the A's of the graduating class, maybe 250 of us, 43 H from Luke Field, a single engine fighter planes. And they start with the A's and they assign them to theaters. And the last 28 guys from R through Z were sent to the 78th Fighter Squadron at Haleiwa on the beach to get 50 hours in a P-40 and then be sent into squadrons that were going to start the ATOL attacks of Inuita, Kwajalein, and those ATOLs.
Yeah.
But they kept five of us from our class, three guys from Iowa, Bob Ruby, Bob Roseberry, and Al Sharon, and me, and a guy from Hawaii, Jack Patterson, and I became permanent cadre for the 78th Fighter Squadron, training other pilots to fly, and we kept the best of every class so that we were the best fighter squadron in the Pacific Theater. That's not a boast, that's a true story, because the 78th, as time went on, became the go-to squadron for the squadron commanders of the other three, of the other two squadrons in our group, the 78th, the 45th, and the 47th. And I became Jim Tapp's go-to guy on the 78th as a wingman. As a Jewish man, they didn't even put me with the fighter pilots when I went and joined the 78th. They put me with two intelligence officers, Marv Kern and Phil Yanofsky. And I had to be like the black guys, Tuskegee Airmen. I had to be three times as good just to be even.
Right.
And I just loved to fly. It was my place in the world as a fighter pilot. And I did.
Were you thinking at any point, I mean, you love to fly, you're so determined, you've had so much to, I wouldn't say overcome, but that you had to put up with just to stay in that plane and get in that plane. And did it occur to you at any point in this time that you're going to be going up in combat and you're going to be killing people and people are going to be trying to kill you?
Never thought about it at all. And then I flew with five guys who were killed in training. And we were going to fly P-47s to Yap and invade that island or Palau or one of the islands nearby and that was called off, and we were all terribly disappointed. Until in October of or November, we got T-51s, which is the dream airplane of everybody who flew.
Yeah.
And then in December of 44, we went to through to Ford Island from Bellows Field and on Oahu, boarded a carrier 3-4 days out to sea. We went to a briefing and were shown a relief map of Iwo Jima, 8 square miles of land, 700 miles from Guam and Saipan, and 700 miles from Japan, which the Marines were going to take. And they started the invasion on the 19th of February, 1945, 67,000 Marines and 23,000 Japanese fighting on a small 8 square mile island.
We have lakes in the state of Minnesota that are larger than Iwo Jima. I mean, I don't think people, and being a volcanic island, when you say that, well, Hawaii is a volcanic island. It's paradise. Yes. This is a much newer volcanic island. It was steamy, a sulfur was in the air, that black sand that the Marines talk about trying to trudge up through. And it was, I'm trying to remember, I've read so much about it. About 5 miles long and about 2 miles wide. We're just talking about a small...
It was 4 miles.
Four?
2 miles. 8 square miles.
4 by 2.
And I was there on the 21st of March this year. It has grown 45 feet higher now than it was in 1945.
It's a growing island, yeah.
5 feet higher. It's still growing.
Go ahead, Boomer.
First, Captain...
Everybody sees the sights. Everybody misses the sound and the smell.
Yeah,
there were 28,000 bodies on Iwo Jima, 28,000 people killed, 21,000 Japanese, and they were just pushed into mass graves and sealed up in caves, and 7,000 Marines, and Marine Mortuary was right alongside of our squadron for the 5th Marines, and I saw just truckload of bodies coming in. It never dawned on me that I was going to get killed. If I thought about that, I would become a defensive player, a defensive pilot, and I would get killed. When I flew with 11 guys who were killed in combat, and I never thought they were killed. I thought they were transferred. If I started with me dying and them dying, I never would have been able to get back into that T-51. Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry, Boomer's got a question for you.
Jerry, first, thank you for coming on Ticket Outdoors. Just like Zepp was saying, this is one of those special interviews that we all actually got a little nervous for. So we really appreciate you coming on, and thank you for your service. But when you were on that transporter, you talk about out of Oahu, and you were out to the ocean for 4 days, and then they show you that picture of Iwo Jima and start to talk to the attack plans. What was racing through your mind at that point and racing through the other pilots' minds?
Good question.
Literally, we wanted to go into combat. We wanted to test ourselves. We were all quarterbacks that had to be team players, and we were.
Yeah.
And we wanted to go into combat. I was on that plane. I had my 21st birthday on that carrier. Oh, no, certainly after I got to Guam, we flew to Saipan on February 15th, I turned 21 years old, and 3 weeks later, on March 7th, we landed on Iwo Jima.
Man.
Straight for the Marines for 1 month, and then the top 16 pilots in every squadron that in our group were assigned to escort B-29s for the first time over Japan, and that mission was an 8-hour mission. They were called VLRs, very long range. And we flew up on the wing of a B-29. We had no navigation equipment. We flew up on external fuel tanks, dropped our tanks. And I watched 150 bombers, B-29s, drop bombs into a square of fire. Little fires became big fires. The smell and the smoke came up to 20,000 feet. And it never occurred to me once that there were human beings on the ground. They were Japanese. They were my enemy. They were vicious, atrocious people.
Yeah, the incendiary bombings of Japan, which actually killed more than the atomic bombs we dropped. And people forget that we really took it to them. And that's why what Iwo Jima was so important was because of those airfields. And you, Jerry Yellen, by the way, our guest, Captain Jerry Yellen, World War II fighter, P-51 fighter pilot, who served Iwo Jima, you guys were landing on that island long before the battle was over. They were still battling for control of that small piece of land when you guys could clear a little airstrip and were touching down. The P-51, for our listeners, was a long-range fighter pilot fighter escort for the bombers that we were going to be sending off to bomb Japan. And that was
the bombers started, Brian, in November from Guam, Tinian, and Saipan. They were doing daylight raids for 25,000 feet, and they were not having much success. And then shortly before VE Day in Europe, May 8th, Curtis LeMay came in, and he changed the whole plan and stopped in June, stopped daylight bombing, went up at night, just firebombed at 6,000 feet, destroyed a lot of stuff, 60% of every major city in Japan was destroyed. On March 10th, 1945, 100,000 Japanese were killed in Tokyo in a bombing raid, and a million were made homeless. And that was in one raid on March 10th, 1945.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry, Steve Straczynski again. Thanks for being on. We're talking to Captain Jerry Yellen from the World War II. He flew P-51s, and he was with the 78th Fighter Squadron. Jerry, you mentioned that you guys just couldn't wait to go into combat. We get the sense that there was absolutely at that time, give me a second now, absolutely no fear in your minds at that time. But then you also mentioned later on when you got back after your first mission that you flew your first combat mission three times. Number one, was there any fear? And explain what you're talking about with that comment.
Well, if I flew it three times, I flew it the night before. I had no sleep the night before. We were sleeping actually in foxholes then. And I wondered if I'd measure up and would I be able to do it. And then I flew the mission itself. And then I relived the mission the night after the mission. I mean, the night of the mission. So I flew every mission three times. And it wasn't a question of being fearless. I knew I could fly. I knew what I had to do. I knew what I wanted to do. And all 16 of us in that first flight of four flights of four planes each, 16 guys, we were a team, and we had a purity of purpose in our lives: kill the Japanese.
All right, you flew 19 missions over Iwo Jima, and obviously the first one is maybe the most memorable. Do you remember all 19?
No, I don't remember all 19. I remember the first one because we had to focus our gun camera on a spot, either on a tip of a cloud or on the tip of a mountain, and we were flying over Fujiyama, Mount Fuji. And that's a symbol of Japan. I said, "Why? Well, you know, what's a guy from New Jersey doing here?" But I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. Go ahead, Boomer.
So,
Jerry, when you first approached Iwo Jima, I would like to, and you talked about this commitment and no fear, because then you would become a defensive player or defensive pilot. Did you encounter any combat? Not just from, you know, surface to air, but what was that feeling when you saw an enemy plane for the first
time? Well, we landed on Iwo Jima, and I saw mounds and mounds and mounds of dead Japanese bodies alongside the runway being pushed into mass graves. And I opened my cockpit, and the smell of death is just overwhelming. Somebody said I had a dead mouse on the wall, they'd understand. But this was constant, and there were gazillions of flies. We had K rations and C rations, cold food pretty much, but you couldn't have anything in the open. And we dug a foxhole, and you heard a gun fire for the first time, a rifle pop, pop. It's not the sound that you think it is, and it's pop, pop all night long, and machine guns and mortar fire and cannon fire all night long, with the Marines taking foot at a time, a yard at a time. It was a ferocious battle. They were...
And to put that into perspective for our listeners, remember that close to 7,000 Marines lost their life on Iwo Jima in that 6-7 weeks of fighting. That's more, or approximately the same number that we lost in both Iraq and Afghanistan over 13 years.
Wow.
Over 13,800 and some odd, but there were 21,000 Marines wounded.
Yeah.
Battles are laid out by actuarial guys in the military. Like insurance people set rates for people at certain ages. And if they have a battle plan and they figure that they're going to get 8 or 9 or 10 enemies for every American that was killed, that's a go. But here on Iwo Jima, it was 3 Americans 3 Japanese killed for every American. Had they known that in the beginning, they may not ever have made that choice to invade Iwo Jima. It was ferocious.
A very high cost indeed. And you think we want to come back and get your perspective on we'll finish up talking about Iwo Jima and then the rest of the war and back home. But I'm just very quickly, we're going to have to take a quick break, Jerry, and then we'll come back and talk to you a little bit more. But did you at any point while you were over there, because I'm thinking of those numbers coming home. We think of the numbers in our lifetime. Right. You know, I think of during the Gulf War and then the most recent wars here. The numbers come home and people are shocked. And at 4,000, 5,000 over a decade.
Yeah.
These numbers are coming back. Over a period of days, hundreds, thousands of Americans.
Yeah.
Did you think about back home and what people were going through, or you just could you even think about it?
I absolutely thought about it. Al Sharon, Bob Ruby, and Bob Roseberry and I, my classmates, one of us and I, there were four guys from 43H, from Luke Field, one of us had to go back to the States to go to rocket school. None of us wanted to go back and then come back to combat.
Right.
None of us. So he pulled straws, and Bob Ruby lost. He went back to the States, and we went into combat. On VE Day, May 8th, he was frozen in the United States, and he never had a chance to serve his country in the war. Wow. He stayed in the United States. That would have been okay with me, but I wanted to fly in combat, and I did. It was a must for me. That's like you take a good quarterback as an All-American, never plays football again afterwards. He wants to play with the pros. This, that, and the other thing. There's something in you about competition that makes you want to do the things that have to be done when they have to be done. Now, coming home, that's another story for me. A bigger story.
Let's start that story when we come back with Jerry Yellen, World War II fighter pilot on Ticket Outdoors.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
He shot down every screamer who's been crowing that he's washed up, that he's busted up, and that he should hang them up. He's not going to do it.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
Boomer here from the Ticket Outdoors. Well, we made it through another long, cold winter in Minnesota. And guess what that means? It's time to hit the open water, baby. And I'm pumped to get back into the Alumacraft T-Pro 195 and get her wet. And I want to remind our listeners, now is a great time to check out the new lineup of Alumacraft boats. I love Alumacraft because they're made right here in Minnesota, and they're simply the best aluminum boat on the water. To learn more about Alumacraft and to find a dealer near you, go to alumacraft.com.
Need new tires before going on your next road trip? Shop the best brands at Mills Fleet Farm. Buy a set of 4 qualifying tires. Get a $50 Fleet Farm gift card. Buy a set of Cooper Discoverer AT3 tires. Get the gift card plus a $70 Visa card rebate. Purina Dog Chow keeps your best friend healthy. A 50-pound bonus bag, $24.98. Get ready for spring turkey hunting season. Hen or Jake decoys are $8.99. And find us on Facebook.
We love it.
Smokes! That's the 4th straight kill shot.
I've been getting in some practice.
Is that a new rifle, too?
Yep. Traded for it. Make that 5.
Lakes Trading Company. Buy, sell, trade, and receive expert firearms training. Permit to carry classes are also available at the indoor range. LakesTradingCo.com.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
We're back. Hey, Zephyr, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Welcome back to The Ticket Outdoors. We're talking to Captain Jerry Yellen, P-51 pilot, World War II. And off the air, Zep was talking to Jerry Yellen. He's kissing his backside.
Yeah, right.
And somehow, I'm the guy that gets Captain Jerry Yellen on The Ticket Outdoors 105. And you're the guy that gets to go fly in a P-51 next year. How did that happen?
We'll see what happens. But I'll tell you what, Jerry is going to be so done talking to me after this is over. He's going to be like, good Lord, is that Brian Zep guy coming? He can't shut his mouth.
You're the only guy that knows what you're talking about. Jerry's obvious. He's got a military background. Boomer nor I do.
Well, I tell you guys know that I usually am pretty dialed into a hunting and fishing conversation, and sometimes my ADD gets the best of me.
Yeah.
But this conversation we've just had for the last 30 minutes, I couldn't even move off my seat. It's probably the fastest 30 minutes I've ever had on radio.
Then let's continue it right now because we've got Jerry for another 15 or 20. Right. Zep, go ahead, pal.
And Jerry, what always impresses me is I expect to always meet one of you fellas that served our country from that greatest generation and find out that he was just average. And you talked about, that we all go through the same experiences. But what always impresses me is how the men of that generation, and many of the women, too, you don't speak to as many of them. That was a male war and a man's generation, is just how much conviction you all had to be there for each other, to get the job done, no matter what it took.
That's the military. The military is about you. It's not about me.
Yeah.
But the country today, it's all about me. There's nobody about you.
Amen.
3 million people have served for the last 24 cumulative years at war. 3 million people have served. And it's not about they themselves are suffering because of what they went through. And I suffered for 30 years for what I went through after the war.
Yeah.
I was a trained killer. And that's what I did. I joined the New Jersey National Guard, and I was looking for airplanes to shoot down. And I absolutely knew after 2 months that if I continued to fly, I was going to die, either by chance or by choice. So I stopped flying for the Air National Guard. And I just flew little airplanes with took my children up for rides on their birthday and around and did the Civil Air Patrol work. But we were trained killers. There's no detraining. All military people in every nation are trained to kill.
Hey, Jerry, you came out of the military almost at the age of 22, and I believe what I've read is true, that after your 4 years in the military, you had an opportunity to stay in the military, re-up, and they were going to make you a major or something. They're going to increase your rank, and you said, it's not for me. I can't picture being not even 22 years old and getting out, going through what you went through for those 4 years, and all of a sudden go home and say, all right, now what do I do? I mean, how does life, how impossible it must be to continue life on a regular basis after going what you went through?
Well, think about 12 guys on a football team, 11 guys on a football team. They win the World Series, they win the Pro Bowl, the Super Bowl. And then they split. And think about the guys that didn't play. But think of the guys who got injured.
Right.
Well, that's what happened.
Right.
I came home and I started to have nightmares. I would speak every night to one of my wingmen. I had 3 wingmen killed off my wing or in my place. And I lived and they died. And I had my classmate, Al Sharon, called in on July 8th. I'm hit and I can't see. And he went down. And Pudgy Carr, my tent mate, he was killed on the 8th of July. And I never thought about them during the war. But after the war, I talked to them every night. I see them. I didn't sleep. I couldn't work. I played golf. I was in high school at 15, the truant officer and the athletic director and the basketball coach used to take me out of class in the spring to give them golf lessons when I was 15, 16 years old. So I played golf. I gambled on a golf course. I never played golf for pleasure. I played golf to kill. It was an addiction to me.
Well, let's talk about what happened. How Dory then, I believe your wife's name is Dory, and after 65 years of marriage, I know she's in assisted living right now. We're pulling for her, but Dory kind of came to your rescue, saved your life about 1975. Tell her what she was doing that influenced you to do the same thing to turn your life around after 30 years of being out of the military.
Well, it's a little bit different. Doris Rosen was a lady that I met as an aviation cadet in California. And when I came home, I went AWOL from Long Beach up to see her, but she was, she was an experienced woman and I was a 21-year-old. Guy, all I'd ever done was fly an airplane in war, and there was nothing between us. But she kept me alive with hundreds and hundreds of letters. In 1949, on Good Friday, I went on a blind date and met Colleen Shulman from New York, in Brooklyn, New York, living in Forest Hills. And we were engaged on Memorial Day, 1949, married October 22nd, 1949. And we've been together for 65 years. She went through what I went through. We moved maybe 20 times. I moved to Israel, and I went there as an athlete in the Maccabi Games of 1965, 1 year after the Olympics. They have a Jewish Olympics. I played on the American golf team. I won the Israeli championship. We won a silver medal. South Africa beat us on the last day after 4 rounds of 72 holes each
Wow.
round. And we left on the last putt of the match. to South Africa, so I got a silver medal. But I was a gambler. I played to kill. I played to kill the golf course, and I played to kill the guys that I was playing with. I wasn't a very nice person, I can tell you that. not in sports. And it was difficult for me. I couldn't figure out what was wrong. I couldn't figure out, why am I different? Why didn't I go back to college? Why couldn't I hold a job? Why didn't I have anything that I could like to do except to play golf? And that kept me alive. Golf kept me alive. And then in 1975, my wife saw Mahesh Yogi on Merv Griffin's television show, and she decided she was going to learn transcendental meditation. And she learned in July of 1975, and I learned transcendental meditation in August of 1975. And instantaneously, there was a change in my behavior, in my perspective, in my life, in my wants, in my desires, and everything changed for the better.
Do you think you could be talking to us today as you are without that happening, without that event?
No, I wouldn't have been here. But I used to look out the window. I worked for her father 6 or 7 times in 5 years or 6 years in New York City. And I used to look out the window at the 9th floor and I say, when am I going to jump? When am I going to jump?
Wow.
No, I wouldn't be here. There's no question about it. Absolutely would not be here.
Jerry, I read your story. Shrew sent us a bunch of stuff and I just started devouring it and really getting into it. There's so many layers to your story. We only have a few minutes left, and I certainly want to touch on the point of, now help me, I don't have my notes in front of me. It's one of your children, and it's a very special story about marrying, and you talk about, because I know men who served in the Pacific Theater specifically, that still hold of a lot of animosity, it seems, to this day, against the men and women, the men that they fought against, the Japanese.
I can't say that I blame them.
Yeah.
In 1983, after meditating for 8 years, I was pretty much a national authority on real estate investment trusts and bad loans. And the Bank of California and the Wells Fargo Bank and the Bank of America all had me on their list as a consultant to their problem loans. And the Mitsui Bank invited me to go to Japan to talk about investments in American real estate. And I said, I'm not going to Japan. They're not people. I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
I told my wife, and she said, well, you didn't ask me, so you know what happened. I went to Japan in 1983.
Yeah.
And I was blown away by what I saw, by the country, by the civility, by the people, by the culture. And my wife said to me on the last night that we were there, Robert would like Japan. Why don't we give him a trip? And he was a senior at San Diego State.
Your son, yeah.
For graduation, our fourth son. He went for 1 year in 1984 to teach English, and he hasn't come back yet.
did you, Jerry Ellen, a World War II fighter pilot that served Iwo Jima, served in Iwo Jima, were you there when you saw that, the beauty and the civility of the people? Did what happened and what you saw in 1940, what year was that, 1944?
Yeah.
Did that come back to you? Was it striking to you? I mean, did you have a lot of memories? You had been through a long meditative.
The only thing that I thought when I walked out on the Ginza on a Sunday morning and I saw the huge buildings, and I looked up through those buildings and I saw the B-29s in my mind's eye dropping bombs, and they were dropping bombs on me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a frightening moment.
Wow.
For me. And that's when my eyes opened up about human beings. We believe, you know, the Japanese served their country with honor. They did what they were supposed to be doing, the way that they were taught to do things, and they served their country with honor. We can't imagine people doing those things, but war is an atrocious entity. And we did the things to them, too. We dropped atomic bombs, fire bombs. We wiped out a civilization called the American Indians. We had the northern guys, prisoners of war, the Civil War, and they were depraved and deprived, just like the Hanoi Hilton. And that's what people do in war.
Yeah.
And we are not what we believe. We're not Christians. We're not Jews. We're not Muslims. We're not Hindus. We're not that. We're all human beings. If the egg of a white Jewish guy can fertilize if the sperm of a white Jewish guy can fertilize the egg of a Buddhist Japanese woman and produce gorgeous grandchildren, we have to look at each other as human beings, not what we believe, not what we were taught. There are evil in the world. There is evil in the world. ISIS is evil. What they want to do with the women, what they want to do with their country, what they want to do if they control people, that's evil. Freedom is for the free, and most people like freedom. As human beings, we need 3 square meals a day. We need a place to sleep. We need something to do then during the day, and we need someone to share it with. That's called life.
Hey, yep. Listeners, we're talking to Captain Jerry Ellen from World War II P-51 pilot, 78th Fighter Squadron. Jerry, do me a favor. I've read the book. Jerry's written 4 books, maybe more by now. The one that I read was Of War and Weddings. And take a few minutes, if you would. I know you've told this story 1,000 times, but I think it's very, very important. Talk about when your son went to Japan,
yep.
got involved with a young lady, and then there was friction between the families as a result of that Japanese young lady falling in love with your son. Would you please share that story with us, sir?
Sure. We went there in 1987, and Robert told us that he and Takako wanted to get married. And I saw the faces of the 16 guys flash through my mind. But I knew it was his life, wow. and he was going to stay there, and not my life. And I said, what does her father say? And he said, Robert said to me, he won't meet me. 7 months later, Mr. Yamakawa, Takako's father, with 2 of her older brothers, met with my son. And the father listened as his 2 sons grilled my son, Robert, about his education, his religion, his background, how to make a living, if he was going to take their sister back to America. And when he spoke, he said 5 things. He asked 5 questions. How old is your father? 63. Was he in the war? Yes. What did he do? He was a pilot. What did he fly? P-51s. Where? Over Japan. That was the end of the meeting, those 5 questions by this 61-year-old Japanese man. He went home and said to his wife, make the wedding. She went ballistic. For 43 years, she hollered at him. You've been telling me how much you paid. 43 years, you've been telling me. And now you want this bearded American to be married to your precious daughter? Tell me why. And he said, any man that could fly a P-51 against the Japanese and live must be a brave man, and I want the blood of that man to flow through the veins of our grandchildren.
It's a great story.
Wow.
It's a great story.
I mean, you can feel everything in you. And then
Jerry, was your daughter-in-law's father in the military as well?
Oh, yeah. He was a kamikaze pilot, a 3-hour hero in training with 50 or 60 guys. They took 2 of those 50 or 60 guys and sent them to China. And he lived through the war. Everybody else was killed. They killed themselves. He was the only one who lived, the 50 or 60 guys that he trained with. He only had 3 hours in a fighter plane.
Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy. Jerry Yellen, our guest, served our country in the war against Japan, over Iwo Jima, over Japan, and P-51 Mustang. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. I wish I could just stop time and continue to talk to you. I certainly want to read your books. Jerry, is there a website someplace we can go? Stru, you can put me in touch where we can find his books.
Amazon.com.
Jerry Yellen, Yellin. Thank you for taking this past half hour and sharing with us your remarkable story. Continue to share it, and thank you, sir, very much.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, Jerry.
Thank you.
Well, that's pretty amazing stuff. Like I said, I don't want to stop, but we've got a Ticket Outdoors show that we're going to continue on. When we come back, Craig Enwald gets to follow that, the new director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Get your Twins inside update every weekday. Hardball with Mike Berrettino of the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Paul Molitor is not looking to skip the 5th rotation spot.
You don't really need that guy if you keep, say, Phil Hughes on every 5th day turn, and he said he's not tempted to do that. He likes what he's seen out of the 5th spot.
Hardball with Mike Berrettino. Brought to you by Nature's Fury NutraDrink. Every Monday through Friday afternoon at 5:30 with Radio Active Sports, 105 The Ticket.
It's time once again for George's 20th annual Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 10th through the 12th. This year's Minnesota Muskie Expo features the lowest prices on boats, tackle, and resorts. There's even free tackle and games for the kids. Join the Ticket Outdoors crew for a broadcast live from the Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 11th from noon to 2. The Minnesota Muskie Expo is April 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Gengelhoff Center at Concordia University in St. Paul. Visit MinnesotaMuskieExpo.com for more details.
At most boat stores, what you see is what you get, which might sound good, but what you see may not be what you want. See, many big box boat stores get their boats pre-rigged, with equipment you may not want in places you may not want it. You wouldn't let someone pick out your wife or your kids, and they're almost as important as your boat. So come to Dan's Southside Marine, and we'll customize your boat to you. Say you're a lefty. You might want your depth finder here instead of there. Or if you're freakishly tall, you might want things at a special angle. Maybe you're a Virgo and you want everything in alphabetical order. We let you choose, even if we think it's weird. Because no matter where you choose to put things, at Dan's you're choosing the best. Motors by Suzuki, Yamaha, and Honda. Brands like Alumacraft Boats and Premier Pontoons. If you want what you see, you know where to get it. But if you want what you want, come to Dan's Southside Marine.
You'll not find a bigger inventory of Premier Pontoons and Alumacraft Boats anywhere in the Twin Cities. Any boat you see online is available for sale at Dan's Southside Marine.
This isn't one of those silly, overdone commercials that makes you change stations. Nope, this is a good, old-fashioned nuts and bolts commercial. Really, it's about nuts, bolts, and hardware. It's about you and Mills Fleet Farm. If you make a living fixing things and building things, you use plenty of hardware. When it comes to hardware, you need great quality, selection, and price. You need Mills Fleet Farm.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Guess what we're still talking about, right?
Captain Jerry Yellen, P-51 flyer from World War II.
You know, and then people, we have little listeners. Hopefully we've got some that tag along each and every week. Or we're having a World War II bet on. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, you make time. His story, and we just really grazed the surface.
Wow.
It's so fascinating. Jerry Yellen, just like Yell, Y-E-L-L, throw an I-N. Google it and catch up with the rest of the story. Scarlett O'Hara from Gone with the Wind
figures
into his story. It's all pretty amazing stuff.
I mean, absolutely amazing for our listeners who just jumped in. I mean, Captain Jerry Yellen was one of the first pilots to fly over Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And he's the last mission as well.
And the last mission, and he is the last living pilot to do it too, right, Stu? Yeah.
His goal is to be the last living American who fought in World War II. He looks great. He carries himself well. He's very intelligent. By the way, August 14th, he will be in Washington, D.C. As one of the featured speakers about what's going on here. You get a chance to fly in a P-51, and that is the final day, the celebration, the anniversary of the end of World War II. So I'm going to try to go to Washington, D.C. I've never been there before.
That would be cool. Yeah, I was there as a teenager, and I think I was just trying to follow. I remember Julie was her name.
Weston.
I just followed her around the entire time trying to hit on her. She was a year older than me.
I don't think I even looked up the Washington.
Well, all right, so we've...
The only thing I'm disappointed in is that we're listening to this, and I said, "Okay, we got to shut up because we've got Craig Imwell on. Craig is in charge of the executive director of the Minnesota Deer Hunting Association." Zip said, "Screw him, man. We got a World War II pilot here.
Zip, that bus just hit you from the behind.
There we go.
Wow, threw me right under. Go ahead.
Let's bring him on.
Bring him on.
Right, exactly. We go from serving our country to serving our deer hunters.
How do you feel now, Craig? Are you a big shot now?
you know what? I'm happy to talk to you guys, but you can talk to me anytime. I want more Jerry Yellen.
We'll have him back on, Craig.
You know,
I looked at the stuff you sent me, Steve, and boy, is he compelling.
Absolutely. I'm glad you had a chance to share it.
During the war, after the war, still to this day. Craig Engwald, they finally found themselves a director for the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Is that a congratulations?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I'm having a good time. I hit the ground running, started in January, and had 13 regional meetings around the state then, and so getting to know the organization really well.
Craig Boomer here. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
No, happy to be here.
Hey, tell our listeners a little bit, who is Craig Engwald? Because the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, as we know, is, 12,000 members strong, a huge advocate, lobbying, and for our deer population. So talk to our listeners a little bit. Tell them a little bit about yourself.
I'll do that, but I gotta mention that we actually have more like 15,000. I've actually worked in conservation in my whole professional career, and before that, I was a kid who was fortunate enough to have a grandpa and dad who Loved hunting, so I started going to deer camp when I was 10 years old, and liked that so much, I actually live, my home right now, overlooking Dora Lake, is where the deer camp was. So I live up here where my dad and grandpa taught me how to hunt. And now we still have a three-generation deer camp. It's just my dad is 84, and it's now my nephew and other young guys.
And a grandfather clock, or is that a train?
Yeah, that's the clock.
All right, I think so. I know. We've got one. It's I can hear it.
So I've been, you know, upbringing is so important, having that deer culture and the culture of camp and the fellowship made me who I am, and so I wanted to pursue that. So after college and stuff, I've worked on conservation issues. I am an attorney, and I worked on the RIM program and CRP and different things. Went to work with the Department of Ag, but was at DNR in one shape or form for about 20 years before I came to the Deer Hunters.
Oh, you were with the DNR for that long?
Yeah, I was an attorney representing Bowser, Department of Ag and DNR, and then went to the commissioner's office about 10 years ago.
Oh, the sexy kind of law.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, Craig, you have got your hands full a little bit. I mean, we've talked about the deer population here in the state, and it's at about last year's deer harvest was about a 25-year low. Very emotional subject. Tell our listeners about the 13 regional meetings that you kicked off since January, and what were some of the major themes that y'all discussed?
Well, that's one of the great things about Minnesota is the diversity we have in terms of our landscape, whether you're down in Winona or up in the Boundary Waters, and I happen to live in the Chippewa National Forest, or, you know, down in Worthington. It's so different, and the situation for deer is different, but overall, as you said, we had the lowest harvest in a very long time, about 139,000. Due to many factors, predominantly bad winters, but management can play a part in that too. And so we're interested in looking forward and seeing what we can do, and we're pleased that Commissioner Landwehr has agreed that DNR should put forward a management deer management plan that would include a harvest goal. We think that number should be in the neighborhood of 225,000, which is about the average in the last 15 years. It's right around that ballpark. And we like to see the harvest levels fluctuate less than they do, to the extent that people can control that, and that's by the number of tags you issue, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But this winter is the best thing we could possibly have.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Yes.
I'm in northern Minnesota, and it's 66 degrees up here, and there's no snow on the ground, so looking forward to a lot of twin fawns, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, Craig, I have to ask kind of the white elephant question. A lot of the sports shows that I attend for talking hunting and fishing, and I was just at the Northwest Sports Show. And
well, yes, so was I.
Yes, but you were there for 2 hours. Never mind. The theme, we were talking open water, but every time that deer hunting comes up in the public, it's the next thing is going to come up is the white elephant, which is wolves. And what can you tell our listeners a little bit about what your opinion or what are your thoughts on the wolf population in Minnesota?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun,
and yeah, Craig, let's talk about what happened in Washington as well, because you went there specifically to discuss the wolf situation, right?
That's correct. And clearly with deer, the three main factors that affect them are weather, predators, and then human management and what we do with it, and predators beyond wolves. But wolves are a factor. But looking at the endangered...
Not in the NBA.
What's that?
Not in the NBA.
Not the Timberwolves. No.
Yeah, but I'm pumped.
No, we're not worried about that.
I got you.
He's quick, isn't he, guys?
Yeah, they're on right now, but I wasn't watching them. But,
yeah.
But with the wolves, you look at the Endangered Species Act, and they set a recovery goal of 1,250, and Minnesota reached that in 1978. Uh-huh. And so we have to look at what the law as it was written, and by all accounts, the wolves recovered in the early 90s. The state's had a wolf management plan since then. In fact, everything what goes around comes around. I was the state attorney who defended the wolf plan in 1999 and 2000 when it was first challenged, and here we are today.
Yeah.
So we're sitting with a population of at least 2,400 wolves in Minnesota. If you listen to David Meach or any of the experts, it's clear they're recovered, and a judge in D.C. decided to take that out of state control in December by saying that because they hadn't recovered in their historical range, including Illinois, Iowa, Ohio, etc., that they're endangered.
Does that mean that we have to reduce our human population to historical? Should we go back to French trapper days?
When and who was the senator we had on who called
Colin Peterson.
What did he call the judge?
I don't know if
ninny.
We can say it on air,
he
but
said,
a ninny.
Yeah,
and I met with Representative Peterson, and
good guy, by the way.
Yep, and he and others are supporting a bill by Representative Ribble out of Wisconsin that, in essence, would turn over the judge's decision. And that sounds funny. That sounds funny at first when you say it that way. But Congress wrote the Endangered Species Act. They could amend it if they choose to. And in essence, they're putting down their opinion if they pass a law that would restore management to Minnesota, that's what they want. So that's within the political process and completely appropriate. Where it stands now is a number of the House members in Minnesota have signed on to that legislation. And actually, when I was out there, I met with Representative Nolan, and he signed on to it when I was out there. Where we need to look now is our two U.S. senators, because there will be a companion bill in the Senate, and that will be introduced shortly by Senator Johnson from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And Senators Klobuchar and Franken have been silent on that.
Yeah, so. I'm shocked.
Well, Craig, I'm not going to ask another question, guys, but I just wanted to say, Boomer here, I just wanted to say thank you for answering that tough question that I asked you, because I know that's not an easy one for you to share an opinion on, because it's an emotional subject. So thank you for doing that.
I think if I could just interrupt, and I think the wolf issue and the deer issue can be a little bit of a separate thing. We're not quite sure, I don't think, yet, of the full impact of the deer population by wolves. However, it does seem to be pretty clear that our Minnesota DNR, Wisconsin, and Michigan have declared that the wolf has come back and been a great success story. It's something we should be celebrating and managing and kind of enfolding into all of our great game management here in this blessed state of Minnesota. Instead, we've got the feds poking their nose in, and now we've got to try and dig ourselves out of it. Right. Craig Engwald, new director of the Minnesota Deer Hunting Association. We're not through with you yet. Stick around, sir.
Minnesota Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.
Stuck in your car and missing the kid you used to be? Remember those days before traffic, deadlines, and all that responsibility? Well, it's time to get that kid back by opening up a refreshing memory today with Killabrew Root Beer. Minnesota-made Killabrew old-fashioned root beer and cream soda. Grab your own super-cold aluminum bottle available in the cooler section of the station store. Killabrew. It's how memories are made and legends are created.
Earnings vary based on your effort.
Do you want to learn how to make money flipping houses right here in Minneapolis? If so, we have an amazing opportunity for you. We're looking for a small group of motivated individuals to join our real estate investing team. You'll learn our simple three-step system for flipping homes right here in the local area. This is Than Merrill, star of A&E's hit TV show Flip This House. My team and I are looking for a handful of people in the Minneapolis area who want to learn how to make money flipping houses in your spare time using other people's money. Minneapolis is a perfect market for my system, and this week I'm holding a free 2-hour educational workshop where you will learn how to make money flipping homes and how to build long-term wealth with income properties.
To get 2 free tickets to Than's workshop, call 1-800-382-9382. Seating is extremely limited. Call right now, because this free ticket offer expires this Friday. That's 1-800-382-9382. That's 1-800-382-9382.
I'm Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. If you or someone you know is facing charges, it's important to have an experienced criminal defense attorney. Hallberg Criminal Defense is the largest and most experienced criminal defense law firm in the state of Minnesota. We pride ourselves on going above and beyond what is expected to provide exceptional service and results. If you are facing criminal charges, call us at 612-DEFENSE to discuss how we can help out in tough situations. That's 612-DEFENSE. Or visit our website at HallbergDefense.com. Again, I'm Marsh Hallberg at Hallberg Criminal Defense.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 877-735-7485 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 877-735-7485 to take your call now. Call 877-735-7485. That's 877-735-7485. Again, 877-735-7485.
From the Mills Fleet Farm Studios, WTVX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WGBZ Eden Prairie, a Cumulus station.
In 1 week, our car broke down and our roof started to leak. We really needed money for repairs.
I really needed to move to a bigger apartment, but with my credit card payments and other bills, I couldn't afford the security deposit.
When over 100,000 people needed money last year, they turned to Avant Credit.
Avant Credit was great. Getting approved was so simple. It relieved a lot of financial stress.
I was approved for a personal loan through Avant Credit. The next day, I had $4,000 in my account.
Avant Credit can get you the personal loan you need fast. It's simple to apply, and there's no risk, because checking your rate with Avant Credit has no effect on your FICO score. Right now, Avant Credit will also give you a $50 Amazon.com gift card after your first installment is made on time. To check your rates risk-free and get this special offer, go to AvantOffer.com today and enter promo code 3535 at checkout. That's www.AvantOffer.com, promo code 3535.
Amazon is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See website for details. Loans are made by WebBank, a Utah Industrial Bank, equal housing lender, and by affiliates of Avant Credit Corporation. Funds are generally deposited via ACH for delivery next business day if approved by 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
We rerun The Ticket every Sunday morning right here on this frequency from 6 to 8.
That's right.
The podcast available in the next couple of days on 105theticket.com. New tires before going on your next road trip this summer. Put a lot of miles on in the summer. Fleet Farm carries all the best brands. Michelin, BF Goodrich, Cooper, Roadrunner, and many, many more. Boom!
Hey, speaking of summer, boys, I know you guys, I'm going to talk later in the show about hitting the Rainy River, and walleye opener here is the state, May 7, 8, 9. Dan Southside, want to thank them, Fleet Farm, Alumacraft, Lakes Trading Company, and Custom Truck Accessories for being sponsors of The Ticket Outdoors. But don't forget, folks, Dan Southside is going to have an open house this weekend, Friday and Saturday. Come on down there. Look at all the big pontoons from Premier, the Alumacraft fishing boats, 35W and 98th Street in Bloomington. Come visit Dan Saturday.
You know, I had an
Sunday
opportunity to go to the Northwest Sports Show, do a two-hour show there, and spend some time at Alumacraft.
Yeah.
God, those boats are nice.
Yeah, they are nice. Go into Dan Southside Marine there and tell them that Zepp said you can do better. Zepp said you can do better. That won't get me invited back. Our guest, director of the MDHA, Minnesota Deer Hunting Association, Craig Engwald. Craig, when were you named? That was, I'm trying to
I
think.
I actually started right at the start of the year. I was named in December and started working January 2nd.
Didn't it take him a while to find a director? It seemed like there was quite a period of time where
controversy.
Was there?
Was there some controversy?
Actually, no, Mark left. Mark Johnson left in October, and they did the search. So that's pretty normal, I'd say.
Craig, was it something you had to debate to throw your name in the ring to be the new MDHA director, or how did that whole process unfold?
No, I've been a member of MDHA for a long time, but in my DNR work, I had partnered on different habitat projects and things, and living in this area and MDHA having the headquarters in Grand Rapids, I knew a lot about it. So it was a very appealing opportunity for me to take the lead and work on issues that are important, both habitat and policy, and I was very excited to put my name into the hat.
Hey, Greg. Since you jumped into the fire with both feet, I mean, you got into this thing, and all of a sudden there's a lot of, not necessarily controversy, but there's some hot topics, whether it's the wolves, whether it's the deer population. What are the biggest challenges you've had to face in the first 4 or 5 years? First 4 or 5 months, rather.
I won't say it seems like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
A lot has happened. You know, I think dealing with the general frustration, and particularly up here with deer hunters, it's tough. My area is very, it was scant. I saw the numbers, and the harvest was like 0.78 per square mile in my area.
Wow.
Which is very low. So there's a lot of frustration out there, and people want action. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why we met with Commissioner Landwehr and said, we've got to address this. And there, the frustration in part two is not just the deer numbers, but the difficulty of hunters understanding how decisions are made. And we've got to work at DNR communicating that better through data. Data is very difficult to access if you're the average hunter out there.
And or understand, so, yeah.
After the session is over, and then that's when the DNR needs to sit down with hunters, not just MDHA, but other interested groups, and work towards developing an understandable statewide management plan.
I'm sure you're already well aware of this as director for the MDHA, is that Minnesota isn't all the same. You talk about your northern deer hunters, southern Minnesota. I think those most of the guys that I talked to down there scored some big buck.
Yeah.
They all filled their tags. Here in central Minnesota, depending where you go, closer to the river or whatever, we've got some nice areas that have done well around here. Northern Minnesota.
Drink a lot of beer.
Northern Minnesota's had that tougher winter up there. The MDHA was at odds with the DNR about feeding deer here the winter before.
Yep.
We've already talked about the wolf. So different challenges for different areas of the state. How do you balance that?
Well, it's interesting, and it's a good point, because up where I live, tough winter every day, you check what the winter severity index is in various places. And if you're in Albert Lee, it's not a factor. You have factors down there, of course, but it is very different. So that's why we have 62 chapters across the state. I have regional directors in the 13 regions who report to us what's going on. I try to get out. For instance, I went on Saturday to a banquet in Perham. I want to know what the hunters out there are thinking and what are the big issues for them. So there's a commonality in that we all want a healthy deer herd, and we want the legislators to hear the voice of the deer hunter. But, you know, you're right. It's different. Southeast Minnesota, there are a lot more deer than where I am up in the Chippewa National Forest.
Steve, it's Straczynski here again. You know, you talk about, let's say politics. You have the people working against each other. Now you've got the DNR and you've got the Minnesota deer hunters. They're kind of sometimes adversaries. How do you walk a fine line? How do you balance that?
Well, first you got to, no matter what, if you disagree, you got to be respectful, and you got to understand that they've got tough things to do. We have tough things to do, and you never let those things get personal. So you are
really.
If you do, it's pretty hard to be effective at the legislature.
Right.
So. For instance, an issue that we have a position on, say scopes on muzzleloaders. We support scopes up to 4 power on muzzleloaders. There are a lot of legislators who don't. There are a lot that do. Well, you know, we got to work through that. If they disagree with us on that, we want them to agree with us on other things. So you work through it, and you respect what they have to do, and make your case. And that's why we have a lobbyist down there who does a great job, but I get down to the legislature about every week to check in.
That often, wow.
Yeah, so because that's where the decisions are being made.
Yeah.
Whether it's habitat issues, some old Sard Sams projects, those type things, it's important for us to weigh in as an organization on what we think.
Speaking of weighing in as an organization, boom, hit them with it.
Yeah, you know, Craig, for our listeners who are just dialing in on 105.1 FM, don't forget to follow us on facebook.com/theticketoutdoors. Craig, what have been the biggest surprises that you've had as being the new director for the MDHA since January?
Boy, that's a good question. What about Alan?
Do you hear that? I was hollering at him. I wanted him to hit you with where the MDHA falls in on antler restriction.
It was coming. I was jabbing with the left.
That's all right. Sorry. So that's not a surprise because that issue's been around for a while. But it highlights the diversity of our membership and Minnesota deer hunters. It's hard to find a common ground across the state on APR. You've got some people who want to mandate it. Our position, and we do have a position on it, is that we support voluntary APR, but we don't support the state mandating it, certainly statewide. But we think it's laudable for private landowners, people to participate together and support that. And, you know, what's interesting is if you look at our position on our website and look at QDMA, they aren't that different in their position. They don't want to advocate for APR across the board if the people don't want it in that area. They support APR more broadly probably than MDHA does.
Yeah.
But you've got to respect what the local opinion is. And
amen
to that, Craig. But to play on the other side of coin of that, you know, we have a couple sections of deer hunting land that I've been lucky enough to been up there since I could remember. You know, one of the things we talk about quality deer management or APR, antler, you know, restriction is, yes, we can say that the landowners need to drive that, but it's really hard if you only own 3/4 of a section or a section, because if that deer is traveling through in it, right, he's going to get shot on another land. So if I pass on a spike and it goes across the road, that deer is going to get shot. And most folks that own land, we're pretty spoiled, probably got 40, 60 acres.
And we're trying to let that 3-year-old become a 4-year-old.
Right.
That's really where you think, oh, he's not going to make it across the fence.
So how do you balance that, Craig, if I kind of called you out and said, well, that's great that the landowners can drive it, but if not everyone in that 4-square-mile radius or whatever, a deer family ranges, it's really tough.
Well, and that's the tough part. What about the what about the kid who's got one chance to go hunting and has never shot a deer?
He
has a chance at a spike, and that's going to be his only chance, and it might be his first time out. You know, that's the tough thing. And our view is that if you mandate that, then you're really creating some tough situation.
I think we could get into a debate right here in the Ticket Outdoor studio, because I'm all for personal responsibility, and we all live by the law. Other people want that controlled and let our bucks get a little bit bigger. We're kind of running out of, we're not kind of running out of time. We're a little over time. Craig Engwald, director of the MDHA. When I went through your resume, and I just learned about a month ago that you were the new director, I liked it because of the DNR service. I think it was a good idea to go get a DNR-minded guy that worked with them, knew them from the inside out. That's the guy I want running the Minnesota Deer Hunting Association. So congratulations. Good luck. You've got a lot of challenges ahead of you. We didn't even get into a lot of the personal conservation and responsibility that your members, we talk about the DNR, we talk about legislation, but really so much of the pie falls on us, the hunter, ourselves, the landowners, and how we can serve and take care of the deer population ourselves.
Yeah, there's lots to talk about, penalties for gross over limits, habitat issues, whole bunch of stuff. But I just say more Jerry Yellen and less me today.
I promise you this. If you don't get fired the next year, we'll have you on again. I promise you that, right?
I'll take you up on that.
All right. We've got a lot more to talk about.
All right.
Craig, thanks for taking some time, and we'll let you go out there and listen to those woodies flapping around out there.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our guest, Craig Engwald. And now we're going to switch gears talking about the wings flapping around. Snow geese, Graham Grethis, maxed out guides when we come back with Ticket Outdoors.
Do you live for hunting and fishing? Tune in to Ticket Outdoors with Brian Zepp.
If you are still wanting to buy a turkey license for the state of Minnesota, if you're thinking about just casually doing it the next day or that evening, I would not wait that long.
I'm not even going to buy a license, because it doesn't make any sense to me, because if I'm wearing camouflage, the game warden won't know who I am anyway.
Yeah.
Do you see me? Ticket Outdoors, presented by Dan's Southside Marine. 2 hours every Wednesday at 7 on 105 The Ticket.
We at Dan's Southside Marine would like to redefine the term man's best friend to mean his boat. Now, before you get all tweaky, let's talk this through. Although your dog is fun, dependable, and great to take fishing, so is an Alumacraft Navigator 165CS. And while your dog may retrieve ducks with lightning speed, he'd have to be just a tick faster to pull you up for a slalom run like the Stingray 200 Bow Rider. And sure, your furry friend obeys your every command with heartbreaking enthusiasm, but think of the enthusiasm you'll feel watching the receptionist from the gym sunbathe on your premier pontoon Escapade 235. And finally, your boat will never drink too much lake water and throw up in your boat. To learn more about the best boats and motors in the Twin Cities, or to complain about the dog thing, visit Dan's Southside Marine.
You'll not find a bigger inventory of premier pontoons and Alumacraft boats anywhere in the Twin Cities. Don't wait. Now's the time to buy. Any boat you see online is available for sale at Dan's Southside Marine.
Need new tires before going on your next road trip? Shop the best brands at Mills Fleet Farm. Buy a set of four qualifying tires, get a $50 Fleet Farm gift card. Buy a set of Cooper Discoverer AT3 tires, get the gift card plus a $70 Visa card rebate. Purina Dog Chow keeps your best friend healthy. A 50-pound bonus bag, $24.98. Get ready for spring turkey hunting season. Hen or Jake decoys are $8.99. And find us on Facebook.
It's time once again for George's 20th annual Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 10th through the 12th. This year's Minnesota Muskie Expo features the lowest prices on boats, tackle, and resorts. There's even free tackle and games for the kids. Join the Ticket Outdoors crew for a broadcast live from the Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 11th from noon to 2. The Minnesota Muskie Expo is April 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Gengelhoff Center at Concordia University in St. Paul. Visit MinnesotaMuskieExpo.com for more details. If you love the outdoors, then you probably have a truck that you love too. Custom Truck Accessories can help protect your truck from the rigors of outdoor activities. They have custom seat covers and floor mats to protect against the mud and dirt from the field. Toppers and tonneau covers to protect your gear. If you're a truck guy, you'll appreciate the knowledge and experience of the Custom Truck Accessories crew. Visit CustomTruckAccess.com or stop by their store to see what a difference being family owned can make for you.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Not bad, he's doing the Joe Giuliano call. There it is. There's the Joe Jr. We'll have blues guitarist showing up at our door here in a few minutes.
Now, hang on a second. You were talking to Graham here between during the commercial here about South Dakota. I have to congratulate you.
Me?
South Dakota. You're a South Dakota boy, right?
South Dakota.
South Dakota today or yesterday, a couple of days ago, increased the speed limit. Hear about this?
80.
85.
You know what?
They're going to 85.
God bless South Dakota.
You know what I said to my buddy? He's like, hey, it's going to 80 out here. I said, well, I'll still be speeding, so... It'll still be a ticket.
Sometimes
but maybe
the roads are a little rough out there.
No,
though.
There's only two freeways, 90 and 29.
Yes, interstates.
80 or 85, whatever the hell it is.
No, 80.
There's a freeway of migrators going through South Dakota, though, isn't there, boys?
Amen, brother. Geese Highway is full.
Surprised myself on that one.
Maxed out guides. It's really. I'm gonna start Snapchatting you guys.
Why do we have Graham on again?
I don't Snapchat. What?
Because it's snow goose season.
Oh, jeez, I'm tired of Graham. God.
Somebody hand him a DNR.
Dude, Graham's a big deal. Get off. He just put on Facebook about the man crush.
Right. This is turning into a reality show. Graham Grasseth, Maxed Out Guides.
Man Crush Wednesday.
Good to talk to you again, buddy.
Maturity.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm trying to corral this nonsense here. You can understand. You've got the guides. The same thing, man.
Did Stu bring a box of wine into the studio again?
Jameson. I brought some Jameson tonight.
Yeah, a box of whiskey tonight. So you're on your own there, buddy.
Graham, are you laying in a field somewhere, or what are you doing?
Tim and Rogers, my fiance, and I closed on a home last week. So the first week we moved in, I've got a pretty great fiance. She actually started moving in while I was laying in the field, and then I came back here this last week to get everything else taken care of.
Well, Stu. Our realtor here just took his headphones off. We've lost him.
Oh, he didn't. He didn't use True.
Hey, now tell you what, Graham. Before we get to the I'm serious about this. Before we get to the goose
hunting, that's why
I
didn't want Graham on the show.
Congratulations, because I've been following your Facebook stuff. Every time I see your photograph and your fiance's or whatever, is nothing but smiles and happiness. I'm so glad for you guys. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
I lost $5. I didn't think a woman would ever accept his proposal, but it happens. And now you're going to be spending a lot more time in the basement. I don't know, whatever it is, a photo booking or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, Graham, we might get around to talking about snow geese tonight, sure. But you're in the basement, but the guys are out in South Dakota right now. Let's talk about snow geese.
Yeah, well, you know, the great, I don't know who it was, we were talking there at the lead-in here that there's only two roads in South Dakota, and that is true. There are only two roads in South Dakota. There are other trails in all of them and in Giant Sloughs that are full of geese, ducks, and snow geese.
It's that awesome out there right now?
amazing.
Is it at the pinnacle of the migration, Graham, or what's cooking?
Well, you know, the birds have really been in the state now for probably a month. We've been going. Our first hunt was on March 11th. We were right on the Nebraska-South Dakota border, and the very first day my guides were down there scouting, he called me up, and I said, well, what's it look like? He said, yeah. You know, there's probably, I'd say, 500,000 birds on this lake. He said, it's really stacked up. It looks great. And then I talked to him, and that was at probably 5 o'clock at night. I talked to him at 10 o'clock the next morning, and he said, I'm looking at this lake that I thought had 500,000 birds on it last night. And he said, this morning, he said, there's snow geese packed shoulder to shoulder into this lake that's for 2 miles wide and a mile and a half, or I'm sorry, 2 miles wide and a half mile long.
Shoot them, boss! What's the limit out there this year?
That would be none. There is not a daily limit. There's no possession limit. So this is truly a conservation hunt. The DNR ultimately, these birds are way overpopulated. Yeah. They want these birds dead. So
you got to see what they do to fields out there when they're trying to get in the spring. It's okay. Just crazy.
Yeah. You just keep shooting when you get into them.
So when Graham, there's no limit. I mean, you don't have a 3-choke minimum, do you?
No. Three shots. No. So I'm not sure where we were going with that. most of my guys and my clients come out.
South Dakota, no choke.
Knuckle.
Graham, yeah. Tell us how you guys are putting hunts together out there. I mean, because the word is out, yeah. And that's what I'm hearing from guys back in South Dakota from the home corridor back there, that they're just moving through and big, huge, swarming populations. How are you guys putting hunts together? Are you putting week hunts together? Can guys go out there for three? Tell us about maxed out guides and how you guys are getting your hunts out there and set up.
Sure. So right now our spreads are running anywhere from 1,000 decoys to 3,000 decoys. It depends on the day. We run 2 to 3 e-collars in the field. Like I said, we've been hunting now in South Dakota since March 11th, and since March 11th, I think we've had 2 days off. We've got people that are coming in from all over the world and hunting these birds because the reputation has gotten out on them. It's just, they're a lot of fun. They're really tough birds to hunt, but it's been a really good year for us personally. We've averaged, right now, we had a 50 bird shoot yesterday, and that probably put us at about 22 birds a day that our clients have averaged since we've been out there. And so that's with a couple slow days. You know, we've had a couple threes and fives. We've had a couple really slow days, but we've also had some really, really big shoots out there. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Boom.
Graham, you know, with all this excitement about the 22 bird average and just the great shoot that you guys are having out there in Sodak, talk to our listeners a little bit more that are, you know, just tuning in and they want to do it for the first time. Kind of walk them through what that experience is like when you take someone snow goose hunting for the first time in South Dakota.
Well, it's really hard to describe because it's really nothing like anybody's ever experienced when it comes to waterfowling. I grew up on Lacaparra Lake, which is the number one refuge here in the metro for Canada goose hunting. And, you know, what we get on that lake in the fall is just a drop in the bucket that we can see in a 2 mile area out in South Dakota. It is the largest bird migration in the world. I would guess in the state of South Dakota at one time there's anywhere from 5 to 6 million birds. It's really a spectacle, and beyond the snow geese, people have to realize it's not just snow geese that are migrating through. It's snow geese, it's Canada geese, it's speckle bellies, it's mallards, pintails, you know, gadwall, widgeon. Everything is pushing back north, and it's unbelievable. It's amazing.
And you talk about, obviously, you want to bring them down on top of you. You want to have everybody wants to empty all their boxes of shells and take a nice big picture, but it is just something to witness, whether they come down on you. You might have a 5 or 10 day or 5 goose day with your entire group of buddies, but to just sit there and watch it, I mean, it just raises the hair on your neck. It's just, it's something to witness, really. And, of course, you want to get them down on top of you. What's working? Yeah. You guys are putting out huge spreads out there. The guys are, I'm sure, going out in the middle of the night. Calling, is that help during the spring hunt? Is that much of a factor?
Well, you know, we're using electronic calls right now because we can in the spring. So everything that we're pumping up, and, you know, we've got custom e-callers made that are running.
You talked about a few of them,
Sometimes 3 at a time. So we're just basically pumping live recordings of real snow geese into the air. And, so for us, you know, that is, it's different than guiding in the fall, because in the fall, you know, you're using your short read call and you're doing some things to work the birds. Well, now it's just really, well, do I turn it up or I turn it down?
Right.
And from what we found, we decoy birds a lot better. Usually, you know, guys want to get out there and they want to, you know, they've got, you know, 1,000, 1,500 decoys. They want to blast that e-caller. And what people will typically find, you actually do a lot better with that volume turned down. And just a real kind of real subtle murmur. I mean, and really not even anything that you can hear that far beyond your layout blinds. But that sound really carries. And if you get it too loud, those birds flare. But if you turn that volume down, more often than not, they will suck right into the hole.
Graham, you know, this is true, man. You know that I'm not one of these big hunter guys. I mean, I've never. These guys always give me crap. I've never shot a snow goose. But talking about what you are describing seems like fantasy to me. Is there some place where I can check a website?
Yeah. Do you need a dark room?
And I want to see all these birds in the air. Where can we find this? I want to see this stuff.
Well, you know, you can always follow us on Facebook, but where most people go is they go to our website, which is geesefearus.com. You know, we've got lots of pictures from hunts all throughout the year. Next year, we'll be guiding 9 months out of the year from August through April as we go from Minnesota, South Dakota, Kansas, back to South Dakota. So they can get all the pictures on there. You know, a lot of people like to follow us on Facebook and sign up for our email list. We're pretty good. We do live updates from the field every day. If we shoot a band, it's up on Facebook right now. Pictures of clients. You know, we really try and keep the people on our Facebook page engaged.
So, Graham, for our listeners out there, how much time is left? Is it April? Till April?
We're right at the end of the migration. We're actually right where we want to be. We're kind of in the sweet spot. So we're getting a lot of those younger birds. They call the juvenile birds, or juvies is what you'll hear a lot of people talk about when they talk about snow goose hunting.
Okay.
So they're the younger birds. They're the first and second year birds that haven't seen, you know,
dumb birds.
Yeah. Snow geese can be 20, 30 years old.
Sounds
and these
mean
juvenile
to me.
Birds are real young. They're called, you know, we call them dirty birds because they're uglier.
Hashtag make a pile, yeah, Graham.
Exactly. They're gray, they're ugly, they're nasty, but they're dumb. They fly fast and they are really fun to shoot. And our favorite geese to shoot are young, dumb geese.
So how much time is left if I'm a listener right now and want to book a trip with you to really get out there?
Maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah, so I'm driving around out there and I'm thinking, man, I want to get out there for this slaughter. I want to see this. I've got a weekend or two to book this thing and it's me. What do you tell guys? Should we have 3 to 5 guys and gals together to put a good trip together? Can a single come out and can you tag along?
Hey, we're like Burger King. Have it your way.
So
if you're a big group, we'll put you in all by yourself. A group of 7 gets a private hunt with just them and their guides, and then anybody else we just mix like you do on the golf course. It's a great way to meet friends and meet new hunting buddies.
GeeseFearUs.com, Boomer Jeff.
You know what? You just stole my thunder. I was just going to say, Graham, plug it out there so our listeners know how to get a hold of you.
He's
got to
get back to scrapbooking with his fiance.
I'm sure they're going to be reading a magazine after this,
right? They're making centerpieces tonight.
Yes. And American Idol's on right now.
That's totally my fave.
Smoochy. Graham Gresseth, Maxed Out Guides, geesefearus.com. Buddy, thanks for getting on and talking snow geese, and you know we'll be talking again soon.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Thanks, man. There he goes. I mean, just, it's, wow. I get excited when I'm thinking.
He had just a devilish smile I could just hear through the radio. You know, what a great guy.
Yep.
Yeah, he is. He's cool. Cool, and I'm thinking, how do I get back home in the next 2 weeks?
I thought you were
going
to take a trip out there, Zeph. Are you thinking about it?
His dad was going to charge him.
Yeah, right, exactly. Dad charges me double. Don't even get me started on it.
Oh, man, for our listeners who didn't check that out, Zeph's dad owns Great Plains Hunting.
Speaking of dads.
Out in here on South Dakota. Beautiful piece of property. And the running joke is Ticket Outdoors. We don't get any type of accommodations, do we, Zeph?
Nothing. I'll Snapchat your pictures. Isn't that what the kids do now, Snapchat pictures? Wendy Coleman, head of Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. That's our guest next when we come back with more of Ticket Outdoors.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
If you put on 23, you put Jordan on your back, and that's what Zach LaVine did. He really lived up to the moment
in one of the biggest stages in basketball.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
Smokes! That's the 4th straight kill shot.
I've been getting in some practice.
Is that a new rifle, too?
Yep. Traded for it.
Make that 5.
Lakes Trading Company. Buy, sell, trade, and receive expert firearms training. Permit to carry classes are also available at the indoor range. LakesTradingCo.com.
This isn't one of those silly, overdone commercials that makes you change stations. Nope, this is a good, old-fashioned nuts and bolts commercial. Really, it's about nuts, bolts, and hardware. It's about you and Mills Fleet Farm. If you make a living fixing things and building things, you use plenty of hardware. When it comes to hardware, you need great quality, selection, and price. You need Mills Fleet Farm.
Boomer here from the Ticket Outdoors. Well, we made it through another long, cold winter in Minnesota. And guess what that means? It's time to hit the open water, baby. And I'm pumped to get back into the Alumacraft T-Pro 195 and get her wet. And I want to remind our listeners, now is a great time to check out the new lineup of Alumacraft boats. I love Alumacraft because they're made right here in Minnesota, and they're simply the best aluminum boat on the water. To learn more about Alumacraft and to find a dealer near you, go to alumacraft.com.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Ow! Shoot him!
Alright. You never know who listens to the show. I'm always constantly surprised.
Bones were lighting up tonight. I love it.
Constantly surprised in this big city.
I got all kinds of great guests tonight, don't I?
Yeah. Fantastic guests. Everything's been sounding great. Thank you.
Royce, can you believe we've only got 25 minutes left of tonight's show?
I do believe it.
Yeah, it's flying by.
Remember when we used to do an hour show and we were talking about, hey, we're thinking about 2 hours and... could we talk that long? And Zep just looked at
that long.
Yeah, and Zep just looked at Stru and I and said, "Man, lock those two in a room."
But
they
we didn't
yap
have
all
any
night.
Sexy ice fishing persons like we like. Wendy Coleman is going to be on here pretty soon.
She's on now, guys.
Say she's on right now.
Wendy Coleman,
she's on right
now. Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. Wendy, welcome to Ticket Outdoors and good luck with these guys tonight.
Hey, thanks. Welcome. Thank you.
Where are we calling you at tonight?
What's that?
Where are we calling you at tonight?
I actually am in Chautauqua, Wisconsin.
Chautauqua, never heard of that.
Chautauqua, Wisconsin,
hey, Wendy,
home of the Stru Man.
Hang on a second, Wendy, we have a lot of fun here. Have you had a chance to listen to any of the show, the first half, with Jerry Yellen from the World War II fighter pilot?
No, I did not.
If you get a chance, this will be a podcast. You can find it. We'll talk all about that later on, but you got to hear that. It's well worth listening to. But the reason Boomer, my buddy Boomer to my left, is giving me sass, I'm Steve Strusinski, we spoke a little bit, is because we've got a place on Prairie Lake, not too far from Walton's Lodge, old Walton's Lodge, Lakeview Resort over there, and I had my buddy Zep here and Boomer and a couple other people there for, a couple of days to... fish and go pontooning.
No, not fish. Let's get to
we
it.
We went to Gilligan's and had a good time, played some bocce ball. And Boomer brings his 7-year-old daughter, Sophie. She's cute as a bug's ear. And Boomer is our professional fisher person on this show. So he knows it all. And so he takes Sophie down to the lock. She couldn't wait to go down to the dock. And they're there for about 15 minutes. And Sophie says, Dad, on the west end of Prairie Lake, Dad, there's something wrong with this lake. There's no fish in this lake.
We couldn't catch any fish. And then, Wendy, let me go on to add to this story. So Stru's like, hey, let's get everyone together.
Right.
Let's go for a nice kind of happy hour, take the pontoon out, drive around the lake. So I'm like, all right, Stru, I'll go get my fishing poles. He's like, no, there's no fishing rods.
No. We're going cocktailing, pal.
I mean... Wendy, for me, that was like absolute torture.
Right, it was. He was fidgeting on the boat the entire time. He kept like air casting, practice casting.
I can imagine because you're on the water and you don't have a pole in your hands.
No. Wendy understands.
It's music, conversation, and being with friends. That's what it's all about.
Wendy, welcome to the Ticket Outdoors.
Oh, we're on the air now. Wendy,
I'm glad to be here.
You're the head of the Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. What is that? I mean, it sounds pretty self-explanatory, but I've never heard of a high school ice fishing league.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I got to go back to when it started. It started actually in 2011, and that was the first annual state high school ice fishing championship in Wisconsin. It was held on Lake Winnebago in conjunction with the Battle on the Bagel, the big tournament in Oshkosh on Lake Winnebago. And I basically answered an ad that was posted on Lake Link for this high school championship, and there was probably another dozen schools that were interested in attending, and we went over and fished this first annual state championship. Prairie Farm actually ended up being the runner-up that year, so we finished pretty well. And ever since, you know, we've been very, very active and have a really super successful program, and this is our fifth year.
So Wendy, first off, thank you for doing this, for getting, you know, youth involved in the sport and into this, where they teach, you know, accountability, responsibility, teamwork versus doing maybe some other promiscuous things. Talk to our listeners a little bit about the Wisconsin High School League. Like, what's the makeup? Is there a league where they fish against each other every week during a certain couple months, or how does that work?
Well, right now we have a pretty extensive winter league system, and we have a website, and if anybody out there wants to check it out, it's www.studentfishing.com. And that's actually the direct link to the Wisconsin High School Fishing Circuit. And right now it's primarily ice fishing, simply because you can get a lot of kids involved. You don't need to put, you know, two or three kids in a boat.
You don't have to spend $300 on a hockey stick.
Right, and anybody can do it. You don't need to be the smartest. You don't need to be the fastest. You can be a boy, a girl, you know, it didn't matter. And right now it's high school kids that are involved in the programs, and we have over 50 schools in the state doing this
so far.
And that number grows every year.
Can you get out of school doing it? Can you get out of class? That's how I always looked at sports. Can I get out of class a couple of days a week and go do this?
Well, I tell you, I actually do this in my physical education program. We do a ice fishing unit, and we do fish for one of the days. We actually get out on the ice for the entire day and you know, cover a variety of topics, anything from safety to basic equipment, you know, basic fishing skills to even more advanced things like using electronics. So, I mean, it's a great way to get kids outside, away from the computers, and get them in the outdoors in the wintertime.
Well, tell us about some highlights from the 14-15 hard water season. I mean, I'm guessing Wisconsin's, you're probably in the same you know, weather we're at over there. It's all wrapped up this year. Tell us about 14-15.
Well, we had a variety of different tournaments, and if you take a look at the website, there's a whole, you know, a whole list there. We started our season off up on Bone Lake, which was hosted by Luck High School. Then we went up to Ashland, just Swamington Bay, and fished the Jim Hunson Memorial Tournament that's hosted by the National Guard.
Are you actually doing, by the way, these tournaments, are there actually winners and trophies and all of that, or is it kind of a participation thing?
There are actually trophies and winners. Usually there's raffle prizes that are donated by a variety of sponsors, which I'll get to in a little bit. So, I mean, there's a lot of pride built up. There's, you know, a lot of competition, a lot of competitive.
Oh, you bet.
It's just like you're playing basketball against somebody. I mean,
sure.
So, Wendy, there's actually a state.
Out there to beat them.
There's actually a state champion, correct? Every year there's going to be a state champion.
There will be a state champion, absolutely. This year we had 31 schools attend. It was held on the Tech chain, and I was the tournament chair for this year because it was in our area and kind of on our home body of water. And there was 43 teams that fished the tournament. Teams or schools can enter multiple teams.
Do me a favor and tell Boomer that someone caught a fish on Lake Prairie, wherever you were.
They caught several fish, matter of fact.
Wow.
You know, this year we did a kind of a unique weigh-in format. We encouraged teams to fish multi-specifically. They were given a bonus for every species they caught, so which added to kind of the people wanting to fish for a multiple.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that is. I like that.
Yeah.
I tell you what's...
So it's pretty unique.
Good.
Yeah, it's not about just pulling fish out of the hole, but fishing different species, using different presentations, you have different jigs and whatever, and you know, and fishing them a little deeper, or where you put your hole. That's pretty cool. I like that. It adds some strategy to it as well.
Exactly. You know, you didn't have to just fish for northerns, because northerns were 4 points a pound, panfish were 16 points a pound.
Oh wow!
But you know, I mean, walleyes were 12, bass were 8. So you kind of had to figure out, okay, what did we catch? What do we want to register with our 10 fish bag? A lot of strategy.
I'm sorry if you already mentioned Wendy Coleman, head of Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. Is this broken down by age at all?
It's grades 9 through 12.
Okay, so it's not a varsity and a junior varsity. You don't have Definitely. So, everybody's in it together. Yeah. You're right. It's not, you know, one of those things where, you know, a freshman ought to be able to fish as well as a senior, except for, you know, experience.
Right.
Wendy, you mentioned a number of companies that might be involved in sponsorship or donating prizes to the winners and whatnot. We're very, very involved with Clam. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, this year, actually, every year we go around, and when I say we, it's a lot of the teams. They actually take their team over to the St. Paul Ice Fishing Show.
Yeah.
We go around and talk to different vendors and tell them who they are, what we're about, you know, the different programs and different tournaments we participate in. And that's kind of how we seek our sponsorship and our donations for prizes and things.
And you get the kids involved in that, you said.
Yep.
I love that.
We go around and talk to the vendors.
They've got some skin in the game. Plus, there's another skill that you're teaching young men and women is how to approach people, talk to them, look, appearance and protocol and that sort of thing. That's a great asset. I love that you bring the kids along.
Yep, the kids come along and they get to meet, like with Clam, there's a lot of fishing professionals
there.
Sure,
Ice team.
We're able to talk to a variety of people, and Clam this year donated the grand prize. They donated 12 ice suits, bibs, and parkas.
Wow.
Not to the winning team, so that was pretty spectacular.
Good old Dave Gaines came through.
Good job, Clam.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and like HT Enterprises, out of Campbellsport, Wisconsin, they're a big donor. Battle on the Bagel gives us money to purchase prizes and also to seek other sponsorships.
It's a cool
Berkeley,
deal.
Jiffy, yeah. Nebulous, you know, there's a lot.
you know what else I think is really cool here, Wendy, and for our listeners who are just tuning in, we have Wendy Coleman, who is
I'll tell you what. Did you type this up, Lukey?
We're going to blank.
By the way, it's the Gangelhoff Center, not the Gagelhoff Center.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Wendy K on, who is the head of the Wisconsin.
No, D, not K.
D?
Oh, Dolman. My.
All right. Dolman. All right.
Wendy. I would like to thank our producer, Mark Lukey, who I haven't thanked yet tonight. Dude, I don't know. Here's a kid that spent all of his time hunting and fishing and not one day in a classroom. God bless him, but we've got to get him some spell check. I'm sorry.
When he got out of high school, he said, this is the last D I'm going to get.
This, right.
Wendy, that was funny.
That was
He's
good.
Not even listening. He's playing trivia crack right now anyways.
Wendy, here's what I've got. I've got Wendy K-A-L-L-M-A-N. Coleman.
It's Wendy.
Make it a D. D-A.
Well, I tried to find her on Facebook and creep it.
Don't you even come in here.
Uh-oh, here
don't
he comes. Even. Here he comes.
Right. Well, right. Let me see.
No, don't throw me under the bus.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well, look at what's on my
Steve
paper right there.
Steve Straczynski. All right. I want to thank Wendy Dolman. Blank for being the head of the Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. And, you know, Zep, she talked about bringing those kids, boys and girls, down to the St. Paul Ice Fishing Show. They picked up sponsorships. They picked up how to talk to folks and ask for things to support a good cause. Speaking of good cause, Wendy, tell our listeners about this National Guard tournament that you did that had over 200 anglers. That's impressive. Let our listeners know about this.
That National Guard tournament is obviously sponsored by the Wisconsin National Guard. Scott Loeffler out of Eau Claire, he's kind of the main contact for that and does the setup for that tournament. And we actually fished up there the year previous. When Jim Hudson actually perished up there on the icy waters, and he actually came and spoke to the kids the year previous of him passing. And, you know, after that, we really felt that we needed to name it the Jim Hudson Memorial, and it's going to be that way for the rest of the time that we're up there.
Very fitting. Cool. Wendy Dolman, head of Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. We're kind of wrapping it up here. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us, Wendy, as we kind of come to the close of our segment with you? I mean, first of all, by the way, how long have you been head of the Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League? I think you mentioned earlier.
Well, we've been involved in it for 5 years. I was the tournament director this year. I'm not the one face of this by any means.
Oh, yes, you are.
Out of Keel, Wisconsin. He's very instrumental as well. And we have a very good, solid group from around the state that helps put things together. So I can't speak for me as being the head. I was the tournament director this year, but there's a group of us that are very passionate about fishing that, you know, that put it all out there for the kids. So
All right, Drew has our final question for you.
Last thing here. Hey, Wendy, number one, tell Tanner that my ball-playing buddy Lonnie, his grandpa, says hi. So tell Tanner, Grandpa Lonnie says hi. And the last question I have is, next summer when Sophie, Boomer's daughter Sophie, comes up to fish, will you guide her? Will you take her out and catch her a fish?
Please.
Absolutely.
Please. There you have it. So she doesn't tell me there's something wrong with that
lake. There's something wrong with this lake, Daddy.
Exactly. Wendy Dolman, head of the Wisconsin High School Ice Fishing League. Good work. Congratulations on another great season. I'm sure you're getting ready for the 15-16 starting tomorrow.
Good stuff.
Thanks for being our guest on Ticket Outdoors, Wendy.
Yep, you bet. Thanks so much.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Enjoy the open water season, too.
Hey, I got one more thing.
Yeah.
Hey, I urge the state of Minnesota, get involved. When we come over to that state ice fishing show, I always talk to people over there, and why does Minnesota not have this?
That's a good question. That's a great question.
Drew, you're getting close to retirement.
Over there to contact me, and I'll help you out.
I mean, you talk about your border battle. We've got it going on. I was at a beer border battle last year. How about the kids' ice? How awesome would that be?
That would be cool.
We get the Minnesota kids and the Wisconsin kids.
Wendy, that's like asking Minnesota, how come we don't have the Packers? Come on. Give me a break.
Drew's wearing a purple shirt tonight. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
All right, Wendy, you know what? We're going to put some people's feet to the fire on that very question when we talk hard water coming up here next season. So thank you, Wendy. Appreciate your time tonight.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Wendy Dolman.
A lot of props to that lady right there for what she's doing.
Mark Lukey, our producer, walked around from his studio. He woke up when he heard us say his name.
Look at his Terminator look at us through the glass wall.
He comes over and he shows me on some email where he spelled it right but not on the... on the sheet he gave me tonight. So that's all right. You get a half a point there, big guy. We love you. Hey, we're going to come back. Boom, you got something to talk about?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the Northwest Sports Show, some of the cool stuff that Strew, Mark, and I, and Zepp, you were there for a little bit, got to see. Talk a little bit about the adventure I got coming up on the Rainy River, a couple boat tips before you get that boat on the water. Next on Ticket Outdoors.
On Deck Radio with Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
Paul Molitor definitely is a motivator in his own way. I think Molly will be able to handle that and address it.
He played the game the right way. As great a player as he was, he's a grinder. He's a guy that grinded it day in and day out.
Yes, he did.
He looked so intelligent about the game. He kind of gets how tough the game is.
Tune in On Deck Radio, Saturday mornings at 11. Wall-to-wall baseball talk on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
If you love the outdoors, then you probably have a truck that you love too. Custom Truck Accessories can help protect your truck from the rigors of outdoor activities. They have custom seat covers and floor mats to protect against the mud and dirt from the field. Toppers and tonneau covers to protect your gear. If you're a truck guy, you'll appreciate the knowledge and experience of the Custom Truck Accessories crew. Visit CustomTruckAccess.com or stop by their store to see what a difference being family owned can make for you.
At most boat stores, what you see is what you get, which might sound good, but what you see may not be what you want. See, many big box boat stores get their boats pre-rigged, with equipment you may not want and places you may not want it. You wouldn't let someone pick out your wife or your kids, and they're almost as important as your boat. So come to Dan's Southside Marine, and we'll customize your boat to you. Say you're a lefty. You might want your depth finder here instead of there. Or if you're freakishly tall, you might want things at a special angle. Maybe you're a Virgo and you want everything in alphabetical order. We let you choose, even if we think it's weird. Because no matter where you choose to put things, at Dan's you're choosing the best. Motors by Suzuki, Yamaha, and Honda. Brands like Alumacraft Boats and Premier Pontoons. If you want what you see, you know where to get it. But if you want what you want, come to Dan's Southside Marine.
You'll not find a bigger inventory of Premier Pontoons and Alumacraft Boats anywhere in the Twin Cities. Any boat you see online is available for sale at Dan's Southside Marine.
Boomer here from the Ticket Outdoors. Well, we made it through another long, cold winter in Minnesota. And guess what that means? It's time to hit the open water, baby. And I'm pumped to get back into the Alumacraft T-Pro 195 and get her wet. And I want to remind our listeners, now is a great time to check out the new lineup of Alumacraft boats. I love Alumacraft because they're made right here in Minnesota, and they're simply the best aluminum boat on the water. To learn more about Alumacraft and to find a dealer near you, go to alumacraft.com. Muskie.com.
It's time once again for George's 20th annual Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 10th through the 12th. This year's Minnesota Muskie Expo features the lowest prices on boats, tackle, and resorts. There's even free tackle and games for the kids. Join the Ticket Outdoors crew for a broadcast live from the Minnesota Muskie Expo, April 11th from noon to 2. The Minnesota Muskie Expo is April 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Gengelhoff Center at Concordia University in St. Paul. Visit MinnesotaMuskieExpo.com for more details.
Need new tires before going on your next road trip? Shop the best brands at Mills Fleet Farm. Buy a set of four qualifying tires, get a $50 Fleet Farm gift card. Buy a set of Cooper Discoverer AT3 tires, get the gift card plus a $70 Visa card rebate. Purina Dog Chow keeps your best friend healthy. A 50-pound bonus bag, $24.98. Get ready for spring turkey hunting season. Ken or Jake decoys are $8.99. And find us on Facebook. We love it.
Now back to Ticket Outdoors, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Doesn't meatloaf sound good right about now?
Oh, meatloaf.
I'd love a good homemade meatloaf.
I love that movie Superman, too.
Isn't that a great movie?
What was his kryptonite?
Focus here, fellas. Let's bring this baby home. Everybody,
what do you think Jerry
one.
Yellen's doing right now?
Sleeping, probably.
Yeah. Oh, hey, wait, don't. Sorry.
Hey, welcome to the Ticket Outdoors.
I guess who comes in to grab a little bit of the glory here?
Yeah.
It's Mark Dookie.
Oh, man.
Dookie Howser.
Dookie?
Exactly.
I'm automatically
We were out there at different times. I ended up going out to the Northwest Sports Show Thursday during the day. I hung out there Friday during the day and just ran around and talked to a bunch of folks out there. So I did my catching up after you guys couldn't join you last Wednesday. The broadcast sounded great. Sounded like
fun.
You guys were having fun.
It was great.
You spent a lot of time out there with the Alumacraft All-Stars and everybody.
Yeah. You know what? It was really an awesome show. I mean, we did a sweet broadcast out there Wednesday night. We had a great, great list of guests. I mean, we had a lady that made whatever, that she called one of them a slippery nipple. I mean, my mind's just going all over the place, Stacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know what? There was such an excitement at the Northwest Sports Show. I mean, 500 exhibitors. Racks and racks of boats. Obviously, I'm biased to the Alumacraft because I really believe it's the best aluminum boat out there in the market.
But you're right. Everybody's out there. And that's why I went out on Thursday and Friday during the day. And it was still pretty busy. Thursday, I got out there. I think it was Senior Citizen Day or something like that. And there was a line outside. Literally, it left that thing. Friday was a little bit more mellow earlier in the day there. But I bet the weekend was just gonzo.
You know what? It was gonzo. And a lot of people were looking because it's a great time to buy boats. I mean, Dan Southside, he had the full army of people there. Alumacraft did. And this time of year, though, when if you're diehard and you got the jitters to get on the open water, a lot of people were talking about the Rainy River because this is the time of year that when it starts to open up, you're going to hear landings like Frontier, Birchdale, Vitus. Basically, what happens is when that river opens up, you've got monster prehistoric fish like the sturgeon and walleyes getting into there to start their spawning activities or get ready to pre-spawn.
What kind of walleye are we talking about up there? Because when you get up to the Rainy, everything gets bigger. So
yes.
Are we talking about, I mean,
you're talking about
averaging 22 inch.
You're talking 22 to 30 inch pigs. I mean,
crazy.
You're looking, you know, they haven't got post-spawn, so their eggs and stuff aren't out. So they're getting their feed bag on. They're getting ready to do their magic. And these walleyes are monsters. And I tell you what, I got super jacked because I'm going to be headed up to Wigwam next Wednesday night. I'm going to get up there late with Thane and Gummer, here's my gear, folks. And we are going to be pounding the Rainy River for sturgeon and walleyes. And boys, it's not unheard of to have 100 walleye day on the Rainy
River. Fishing pre-spawn walleye, they're at the mouth of the river when they're spawning like that. Talk about how you handle that a little bit for people that are going up there, getting them back in the water, saving some of those walleye on the catch and release, and because they're pre-spawn.
Yes, you know, be really careful. I know that's easier said than done because for folks, and even for myself, when I get a 26, 27-inch walleye, you're super stoked. You're
not
getting the pictures out. Just be careful where your hands are going to be. You know, don't put your fingers in the gills. Try to be careful of that. I'm guilty of this as well, so I'm going to throw myself under the bus right away. But you call it the hero shot, right?
Yeah.
You hold that walleye up, and it's sitting vertical. You know, I'm not going to say that's You shouldn't do it because I'm guilty of it, but try to hold it more horizontal right. if you're going to be doing a ton of pictures or film with that fish because it's easier on it. And when you release it and you put it back in the water, be gentle with it. These fish are getting ready to make more walleyes, so put it in there and just, you know, if it's not adapting to the water right away, give it a little wiggle. It's going to come out with your hand on the back end of that tail and just let it go. The other thing when you're fishing these type of fish, have the right gear, okay? Stru and I kind of laughed up at Geiger's number when you had the Zepco and you did pull in a yep. walleye. yeah. This is not the time to bring out something that only has 4-pound test yeah. or the small little ultralight rod because that's what you brought with. Make sure you're using the right equipment for these fish because you could get into a 60-inch sturgeon that's going to take you for a 45-minute boat ride, or you could get into a 10, 11-pound walleye. And you know what? You don't want that line to bust and have that lure jig in its mouth and then something happen to it down the line. So try to use at least 8 to 6-pound test. Make sure you got that right equipment. You know, I like to use braided line and put about a foot leader on it. You know, I was at Thorn Brothers, and Josh and I were talking about, you know, the more river current you have, the less lead you want to put on that lead line. So that's just something to think about. And if you're going for those sturgeons, make sure one thing Josh taught me is from the elbow down to your finger, just not a lot of lead when you're chasing those big sturgeons. And boys and girls, if you're using circle hooks on those sturgeon, don't set the hook because it's going to hook itself and you don't need to do any more damage to that fish.
Short lead,
this
don't
guy's good,
set
man.
It.
This guy is good.
Not bad. We might have to have him back again on the show.
I'll be calling in Wednesday night on the way up to Lake of the Woods, boys.
We got Papa Boomer, Mark Lukey, the wild card, Steve Struzinski, and Boomer. Thanks, guys. We broadcast Sunday mornings at 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock and the podcast available in the next day or two. Check back on 105theticket.com. We'll catch you next Wednesday at 7 o'clock on Ticket Outdoors.
This isn't one of those silly, overdone commercials that makes you change stations. Nope, this is a good, old-fashioned nuts and bolts commercial. Really, it's about nuts, bolts, and hardware. It's about you and Mills Fleet Farm. If you make a living fixing things and building things, you use plenty of hardware. When it comes to hardware, you need great quality, selection, and price. You need Mills Fleet Farm.